Welcome to the Blackout Podcast, where I get to talk to amazing people who do amazing things. And today I'm super happy to have another friend with a PhD. Like, where do I make friends with all these learned people? Super awesome social justice advocate, Helita Tree. Thanks for coming to the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
I remember I saw a post on your LinkedIn. I'm like, okay, I need to talk to this person. It's like, you had a very opinionated post, but it wasn't like preachy at the same time. It's like, this is what I think, and this is how, like, I want to express myself. And I'm not telling you, like, I'm not trying to convert you or whatever. This is just my thoughts, you know? And I love that, because sometimes, you know, posts can come a little bit preachy. So before you get into the social justice thing, when did the writing thing come? Like, have you always been writing, or...?
I've always liked to write, like even as a little kid. And I remember I won like a poetry contest when I was just little, and I like to pretend to write books and things like that. And that's like kind of just grown as I've grown, and it's translated really well into academia. And I actually love writing essays, which some I know. Yeah, that's what a lot of people's reactions are. But I love it. Yeah.
Like even back in high school, you've always loved it, or?
Yeah.
What do you love about it?
It's kind of like, this sounds so cheesy, but it's like an art form in a way. Like you have to like kind of like bring the reader through, and you're kind of like making a point with facts. And I think that's like my favorite part about it is I am very passionate about things and especially like social justice issues, but it's not just like, these aren't just my feelings. I didn't just make this up. Like there's real hard facts and studies behind this stuff. And that's what I really appreciate about essays and about academia is being able to say, you know, no, this isn't just my snowflake feelings or whatever people like to call it. Like there's cold hard data behind this.
And that's the thing I find that, you know, especially on the internet, like on social media, feelings trump facts. Why do you think that is?
I think it's people are just so like passionate, and I'm the same, right? Like your feelings sometimes can like get the best of you, and I have certainly been there before. But like being able to have the facts to back up the feelings, you know, I think is so important, and it to me puts some more validity behind it.
So you finish high school and stuff, like has. Like, the PhD track is so long. Like, was that always the plan?
Or? No, no.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. No, I always wanted to go to university and take sociology.
Wait. What sociology is in psychology?
No, a lot of people think it is. Sociology is the study of like people and their relationships, and also like the overarching societal structures that kind of impact how we live our day-to-day lives.
Wait, you have to do like surveys and a lot of experiments to do that, or?
I wouldn't call them necessarily experiments because that feels more science-y.
Okay.
But I do like a lot of interviews when I'm doing research and surveys and things like that. So more qualitative research gathering. But, you know, it's still data.
Okay. At what point did you decide you're going to study sociology?
Back in high school, I took a sociology course and I loved it. I thought it was great. And my plan then was I was going to be a social worker. And then I went into my undergrad and I ended up loving academia and research and things like that. And I also had a professor who had previously been a social worker and talked about their experience. And I realized I wasn't meant for that. And I decided to do a master's degree. And I remember saying to my professor, my thesis supervisor in my undergrad at the time, he encouraged me to keep going. And he said, if you could be anything, like, what do you want to be? And I was like, well, I'd love to be a professor. I love teaching. I love academia. But I'm not smart enough. Like, I could never do a PhD. I could never go to grad school. And he said, well, who said that? And I was like, well, me, I guess. And he's like, okay, so you're the only person standing in your way. Like, I think you can do it. Like, go for it. And then I applied for my master's and I couldn't believe it. I got in, and then a couple, 2 years go by really fast. And I was like, screw it. I'll go for the PhD. And I got in, and now I'm still doing it. Yeah.
What did you do your master's in?
Sociology. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And like with the PhD, what's it going to be? You're going to be like,
so I'll get to call myself a doctor, which is cool, but not a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping to be a professor, and I'm teaching part-time right now at St. Mary's University, which is pretty cool.
What are you teaching?
I'm teaching a course on intersectionality.
Okay, so I don't want to say 2020, because even before 2020, like, that word has just been, like, there.
Kind of a buzzword.
But, like, what is the easiest, or, like, I guess, like, just a few sentences to say, this is what it is?
Yeah, so intersectionality is kind of a way to look at the world, and it's a way to understand how people move through lives and how do their identities overlap. So how does my experience, not just as a white person, but as a white woman, or as a white woman who grew up working class, or and like sexual identity, how do all those like identities overlap and intersect and impact your own experience as a human moving through the world?
That's a lot though.
Yeah. I guess.
so like, I mean, it's always been there. What do you think has been the, I guess, the jet fuel that's pushed it into the forefront of things lately?
I think it's because like social justice movements are starting to grow more and more, and kind of it's saying, for instance, like, it's not just enough to look at feminism, but to look at intersectional feminism, right? So feminism has traditionally been very targeted and also like spearheaded by a lot of white women, but instead it's saying, no, like, let's look at feminism for transgender women, for queer women, for black women, for brown women, for indigenous women. And you can see that in all kinds of different movements too, like the BLM movement. So how does the Black Lives Matter movement impact not just black people, but black women, black trans women, black men? So it's like you're looking at kind of like the deeper layers of these issues. So I think that is why intersectionality has started to kind of like come more forward lately.
It's a lot of work too, though.
Yeah, it's not easy. Like, we're also taught from a young age to kind of not like to have those blinders on, right? But intersectionality is kind of, you're peeling back those layers and you're peeling back those blinders to take a more closer, in-depth look at people's identities, and not just identities, but social issues. So how is this social issue intersectional, or how can we take an intersectional approach to this problem so that it helps more people?
So, like, for you, which came first, like, studying all this in your course, or, like, social justice? Like, has that always been a thing, or this came up from, oh, I'm studying this, maybe I should find out more?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I've always kind of been, like, a kind of left-leaning, not as much as I am now, and I do, credit a lot of that to my education. And I feel like my like big kind of like saying, I guess, my catchphrase, if you will, is when you know better, you do better. I'm such a huge believer of that. And I think that education is so powerful. I certainly, when I was younger, I grew up in a really rural town, about 1,000 people, and
no,
yeah, really small, so small.
Everyone knows everyone.
Yeah.
Oh my God, no.
Yeah, very rural, very like small town. So, I didn't always have these leftist beliefs, of course. It's not what I grew up in.
Right.
I kind of was always like left leaning, but then I went to university and I learned so much more, and I feel like that kind of like opened my eyes and my worldview, and I hope to like instill that in other people, especially my students.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to this, to the teaching part, but like, let's talk about the social, like, activism. Mm. So, okay, I mean, you've been left-leaning, come to university, find out, there's more here.
There's more, yeah.
So, like, I guess, what's the journey been like for you? Where did it start from, and where are you at now?
Yeah, so the journey, I would say, started, like, well, I grew up in a very, like, my family, my grandparents and my mom, they're pretty much who raised me, my mother and my two grandparents, and they're just such welcoming, kind, caring people. Like, would give you the shirt off your back. Like, they're just amazing. So I feel like I got all of that from them. And then my world started to, I guess my world got a bit bigger, my worldview, when I was about 14. I went to a leadership summit run by Heartwood here in Halifax. And it was for folks all over Nova Scotia. And it wasn't just for youth. It was for like youth workers and politicians even. And I went to that. It was called Leaders of Today. And that completely like kind of blew my mind. Like I was so, I was much more introverted then. I was younger. I was more shy. And I feel like that experience just opened my eyes, and I really kind of started to come out of my shell more. Like, for instance, before then, I knew that like there were queer people, that there were gay people, but that like it kind of, the buck kind of stopped there. And then I went, and people were like, pronouns, and some people are trans, and you know, bisexual. And I was like, whoa, what's all this? And it was like such a new world for me. And then I remember like sitting with other young folks my age from the city, mm-hmm. who were kind of like educating me on this stuff. And I just kind of like blew my mind. I was like, how did I not know this? Like there could, you know, like we should talk about this more in my school. And so that kind of was like the springboard that made me realize, you know, there's more to the world than my small circle in my small town. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of just like went from there. And then taking sociology, I like opened my eyes more than going to Mount A, and you're with other. And Mount Allison in Sackville, New Brunswick, it's like a very leftist university too. And there's some forms of activism there, but I didn't become as big an activist until I moved to Halifax. And I think it's just because it's a much bigger city and there's so much more possibility. And what started, I was like my first month here. One of my friends who I'd met in my program and my master's said, you know, there's a rally. And at the time they were Fight for 15, Halifax. Wow. And
what is that?
So Fight for 15, and there are still some chapters, but it's an organization that pushes for a $15 minimum wage. Wow. But we're now called Justice for Workers, and I'm still very, very involved. I have a meeting later today with folks. It's all volunteer, grassroots based. But yeah, I had a friend who I just made, and she said, do you want to come to this like rally, this Fight for 15? It's like pushing for like a more fair minimum wage. And I was like, hell yeah, I want to go to that. And I went and I loved it. And I remember people like, we were taking over the streets, like people were chanting and there was a banner and signs and there were speakers and chants. And I just loved it. And I got more involved, and I've since been quite involved with Justice for Workers, but also other rallies and events I try to go to what I can. And yeah.
Why is that important to you?
I think it's important for many reasons. Like, I think numbers matter. So for instance, like the when I can, I try to go to the, you know, Free Palestine rallies and protests. I think it's important to show numbers, to show the government and local representatives like this is an issue that the people care about. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to also like show solidarity with people who are facing a certain struggle. But also sometimes, like, frankly, it's just like it's a feel good thing. So recently I was helping with an event where we were protesting a arms manufacturer at a career fair, and kind of saying, you know, shame on you, like you're helping to, you know, arm Israel and things like that. And we were calling for like a Free Palestine. And it was a pretty low-key action, but like so many students came by and were so thankful. Like so many people stopped and had a conversation and talked about how much it meant to them to see us there, mm-hmm. and to see us there like calling for change and saying like we stand in solidarity with Palestine. And like, so that was like, again, it was a very low risk action, and it was pretty chill for the most part. But like just to see, wow, so many people support us and support Palestine, and we're so happy and thankful that we were here. Like you leave feeling energized and just like, you know what, maybe the world isn't so bad after all. Like there's more good people than bad out there, you know.
Wow, okay, yeah. I got let's go to teaching now. I know it's like you're doing the teaching at Mount St. Vincent.
I go to Mount St. Vincent, but I teach at St. Mary's.
It's
okay. Confusing. Yeah, yeah.
So that's cool, and that's teaching. And I guess, what are you're teaching intersectionality, and mm-hmm. what's your, like, how do you prepare for your class, I guess?
It's a good question. And I should note, I've only started teaching, like, in January. Like, this is very new. I've had experiences like a guest lecturer, but I've never had a class that was like just mine. Mm-hmm. But I do the readings. I can't skim them or skip them because I'm the professor, so I should probably know what the readings are about. So I'll do the readings, take some pretty in-depth notes, and then I'll create a PowerPoint and kind of write notes and discussion questions for students and then just go to class and take it from there. But I don't really practice beforehand, and I more so like it to be a discussion with each other and not just me sitting there talking to them the whole time.
Yeah. Nobody likes that.
Yeah.
What do you love about teaching?
I love teaching because I love learning, and you get to learn something new. And teaching is, you know, you're helping to share the love of learning and teach them new things. But also, as an educator, you're constantly learning yourself. Like, I'm constantly learning from students, like, whether it be in the classroom, or I also work at the Writing Center for Mount St. Vincent, and I learn, like, every appointment, I pretty much walk away having learned something new. So I think that's another reason why I really like teaching.
What is the job? What do you have to do for that job?
I just tutor students. So they'll come in with like an essay or just a question, and we'll go through it together. And I've made some cool relationships through that. Like, I have students who come every week, and you know, it's like, hey, how are you? Like, let's get down to it. How's your paper looking? And some students, like, they only come once, and that's fine. But yeah, that's like another space where I get to kind of practice that love for teaching, but also learning, right? I'm always learning from students.
So for PhD, you have to write a paper, right?
Yeah, great big paper.
really big. Is yours going to be about?
Mine is going to be about rural youth in Cumberland County. So that's where I'm from, Cumberland County, Nova Scotia. And it's a big county space-wise, but it's made up of a lot of small towns like Oxford, so where I'm from. And we're not even the smallest.
Oxford, the thing.
The blueberry.
Yeah.
Oxley. That's his name.
Oh, how's his name?
Oxley.
I didn't name, but like, I you know, because that's the gas station is right there. So you don't stop and you take a photo with that thing.
Big guy. Like,
yeah, okay. Oxford, okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm from. So yeah, I'm going back to the community, to the county, and doing research in Oxford and other little towns in the area to look at, to talk to youth and youth workers and talk about how can this be a space that youth want to live. So I haven't started data collection yet. I'm hoping to do that in the next few months, where I'll actually be interviewing youth and youth service providers. And what's great about this project is it's not just mine, but I was approached by a local group in the county that's made up of volunteers, but also like municipal representatives, like counselors and things like that, who said, like, we want this to be a place that our youth want to stay, and not just they graduate and I can't wait to get the hell out of here. Yeah. So I'm really excited to look at that, and how can we make this a space that youth want to live and not just live, but thrive.
So it's like, you are kind of doing something that you wish was done while you were there, in a way.
Yeah, in a way. Like, I still have family and stuff there, and I still have, like, some connections there, and it's like, how could we get a youth like myself to, like, return there, right? Or to have perhaps, like, returned after I was done schooling, or how to make it a better spot for youth who do stay there their whole lives, right? So I'm really excited to dig in and to talk to the youth, especially. The youth service providers are going to be great too. But I think it's going to be really good.
Wow.
I'm excited.
It sounds daunting too, though.
It definitely is.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to talk to all these people and then write all these things down, and oh my God, I can't even.
Yeah, it's so much writing. Like, I had to just do a proposal, right? Like, just to tell them what the project's going to be about. So I haven't even gotten into the nitty gritty, and that was 70 pages long. So this will.
No.
Yeah. Lot of writing.
Okay. So there's this thing where I do, excuse me. Where I actually, before I do this though, okay. I want to ask, so when, I guess, when you are, like, you know, getting ready for a protest, we talked about your teaching and stuff, but like with the protest and stuff, how do you prepare for that?
How do I prepare? That's a good question.
Right.
Well, if it's a more like low-key protest, I don't really have to prepare too much Sometimes I'll make a sign. Other times I'll just go and see what it's about. But if it's something that's going to be a bit more high risk, like there's a chance of there being police presence or things like that, I try to be hyper aware of that. And so, for instance, like making sure, like, do I have like a lighter or anything on me? Like, because you don't want to have anything that could be perceived as a weapon on you. And even though like I've never been arrested or anything like that, but it's like you never know, right? Like, look at what happened. I can't remember what year it was, but it was like on August 18th with like the homeless encampment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've had friends who were like attacked by police then and folks were arrested. So it's like, it's better to be safe than sorry. And I've taken a course, not a course, but like it was a day presentation from Asif Rashid, who's a lawyer here in Halifax. Mm-hmm. And it was about knowing your rights if you do go to a protest or a rally. And that was so informative. So knowing that, if it's a more high risk rally, I've like also what's commonplace is to write a lawyer's number on your arm. So if you get your phone or things taken, it's right there and you know who to call when you're at the police station. Thankfully, mm-hmm. I've never had that happen to me. But, you know, better safe than sorry. So some are really chill and I literally just rock up and, you know, sometimes I'll be walking by and see, like, there's been times I've walked by and been like, what's this? Like, yeah, and popped in.
How can you tell they might be higher risk, right? Because,
yeah, like, I guess at higher risk, you have to, like, assess the situation. Like, if it's just a peaceful kind of, like, a peaceful rally walking through the streets and there's a couple speakers, it's going to be pretty low key, I would think, right? But if you're starting to perhaps like block a bridge or you're doing a sit-in at like a political representative's office, that's far more high risk.
Okay. Yeah. So it's the act that kind of decides.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
The act, but also what are you standing there for? Like, so recently, I don't remember what month, it might've been November, October, but there was like that Million Children's March where people were marching against like, yeah, against like queer kids and trans kids.
See,
and
I'll let you finish, but my thing is, it isn't affecting it like, like it's not affecting you though. I don't, anyway.
Like, why do you care?
Yeah, like I don't understand it. I can't, like, what, anyway.
Yeah, and that's how I feel too. Like, why do you care? But there was a counter protest, and so I, you know, me, my partner, my friends, we all went to that, and I ended up having to leave because I had a work commitment that I just couldn't miss. But one of my friends stayed, who is in a visibly queer relationship, and they had sticks thrown at them, they had water bottles thrown at them. Like it did turn violent, and there was, I remember, a wall of police there, and I wasn't as scared as say someone who's like new to protesting. But something like that, that was more high risk because it was kind of like a counter protest, right? So that was a more high risk one. And so you have to look at like, what am I going to rally about or talk about or protest about? Because that's going to change it. Like a Labor Day rally where people are just celebrating Labor Day and, you know, there's like cotton candy and, you know, people are singing songs. That's so different compared to like this counter protest that I went to, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I can't wrap my mind around that. Like, the whole homophobia, I don't understand it. Like, it's the one, I mean, there are other, like, when people have the issue, I'm like, sometimes I'm asked, so what is the real problem? Like, what is the real problem you have and how is it affecting you? And I've never actually been able to get a good answer. Like, how, it's not taking money out of your pocket. It's not affecting your job. It's not doing anything to you.
Yeah, I've always like stuck with and like circling back to education again, because I love education and that's what my PhD is in, is like educational sociology. But again, I really am of the belief like when you know better, you do better. Not that that excuses it. There's some people you can talk to and educate until you're blue in the face and they're still going to be an asshole. But I do think that that's not everyone. And when you talk to people and they learn better, it's like I really think they can come further. And that's, it's challenging, right? Like, cause it's like, you get into this conversation of like, well, is it our job to educate you? And how do you have those conversations with people who are like putting down like your existence, right? So it's tricky, but you know, there's small steps to take, especially like if you're a privileged person. So like as a white cisgendered woman who's in a straight passing relationship, I have more privilege and ability, I think, to put myself in more harm's way when possible, to have those conversations and to try to protect my comrades who, you know, are in queer presenting relationships, who are not able-bodied or who are people of color. So that's something I think important to remember too. But I really think a lot of it comes down to like ignorance and what have you been taught your whole life? Like nobody's born to hate, right? Like you're taught it. So it's like, how do we undo that? But there are unfortunately just always going to be assholes.
Yeah, just always going to be assholes.
Always going to be assholes.
So another thing that while you were saying that, I was just thinking like, there's a studying, you know, there's work, there's like your partnership, all these things happening, and then there's all this social justice work you're doing. Like, what's the toll on your mental health and how do you take care of yourself?
Thanks. That's another great, really important question. It kind of comes at a cost, you know, being more educated. So my partner, he's also in sociology, and we'll sometimes have those conversations of like, oh, wouldn't it be nice to just be ignorant and like, you know, not have to worry about any of this like stuff, like societal collapse and, you know, all these things. But I try to spend time with my partner, with my family, with friends, and to kind of try to like, have moments where I can just shut my brain off, for instance. So like, this might be a silly example, but like I'm in talkie, and, before when I was younger and kind of a more uptight, you know, a fresh leftist, you know, who'd just become a social justice person, I was far more uptight, and like I've had to learn like, okay, you know what, I can enjoy things too. So for instance, like knowing hockey is a very white sport, it's a very privileged sport, there are, you know, it's sexist, it's not really as open to women, and it's pretty like queer phobic, and you know, knowing those things and like talking about those things, but at the same time, it's sometimes nice to just go to a Mooseheads game and chill out and cheer for your team and drink a beer, you know? So I think like having those moments where you can just like, you know, take a breath and recognize like, you know, time and place to be really political, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that leads us into this question that I'm asking everyone. And I kind of like spin it around from time to time, but the essence of it is the same. What's something that happened before you were 17 that you feel it's responsible for the person you are today?
Oh, that's a big question. A big part, like that leadership summit I talked about would be one of them. But honestly, I think a big one, this isn't exactly one specific moment, but I grew up very working class. Like, my mother and my stepfather were like, they were really hard workers. My mom's still one of the hardest workers I know, but just, we always grew up like paycheck to paycheck. Like there are times like, you know, why won't the internet work? Oh crap, it's been shut off. Like there've been really real moments of that. And certainly we could have had it a lot worse for sure. But I saw my family struggle and really stress about funds and money. And I feel like that was just like my first eye opener of like, wow, sometimes like shit just isn't fair. Like my parents work so damn hard, and this is nothing to do with them. It's just like their labor isn't valued. And why do some people have billions and millions of dollars, and like my parents like have to scrape, you know, their money together to get by, and they work way harder than say these like big business owners. So I think like having that lived experience, it certainly opened my eyes to things, and got me passionate and kind of riled up about like, you know, this isn't fair. And then looking at, wow, there's actually a lot of things that are unfair. And what can we do as a society and as individuals to try and level that playing field and make things more equitable across the board? Yeah.
Make this more equitable across the board. Thanks so much, Haley. Actually, no. There's one more thing.
Oh.
So I have this thing I'm doing with guests that come to the show. Is a super awesome magic. And what you're gonna do is, there you go, get a pen.
I'm excited.
And I need you to write a number between 1 and 60.
One in 60.
Yeah, do not show me the number.
Okay.
Just point it to the camera and then hold it close to your chest.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Can I show it to the camera?
Yeah, yeah. Got it. Okay. Do you wanna keep it to you? Because I'm gonna use the arm of your chair for the next part of my magic trick. Okay.
I'm so excited.
So the number can be one of these cards or more of these cards. I'm gonna ask and then and then you point it out. Okay. So the number can be one or more.
Mm-hmm.
Is it in here?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's the first. Is it here?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Is it here?
No.
Okay. Is it here?
Yes.
Okay. Is it here?
No.
No. Is it here?
No.
Okay, so I'll ask again. Is it in this one?
Nope.
Nope. And?
Nope.
Huh. So it's in this three though, right? You're sure it's in this one?
Yep.
Oh, this is a hard one though. Hmm. Okay, give me a second.
All right.
Take a while. So you're sure it's in just this three? Actually, let's just do it again. It's not here. No.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Okay, I think I got it now.
Yeah?
I think I got it. Okay. No, I don't have it yet.
I'm stumping you.
Yeah, you have kind of actually. Okay, ready to get your mind blown.
Okay.
5-2.
Oh my God, yes! How did you do that?
Magic! Haley, thank you so much for coming to the podcast.
Thank you for the magic.
Thank you so much for coming to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.